We begin our class tonight in the name of God transcendent, God omnipresent, God immanent, the Holy Living Trinity. Amen. We come into this space. We bring our presence into this moment. We feel the support of the chair, the floor under our feet. We become aware of sensation in our bodies. Just taking the time to observe the variety of sensation in the body. Sensation in the legs, arms, neck and shoulders, head. Sensation of the breath coming in and going out. Becoming aware of any tension and just relaxing. Leaving the events of the day outside at the door. Just being here. Now. Become aware of any feelings that are present. Thoughts running through the mind, catching our attention. Just as in centering prayer, we just bring the attention back, in this case, to our body. Here, present, as a three-centered being, centers aligned, we listen to the gospel for today, for any word, any phrase that speaks to us in any way, perhaps work ideas. Can we listen with new ears? To hear without association this very familiar passage, as if we've never heard it before. Jesus said to his disciples, "Not everyone who says to me, 'Lord, Lord,' will enter the kingdom of heaven, but only the one who does the will of my Father in heaven. Everyone who listens to these words of mine and acts on them will be like a wise man who built his house on a rock. The rain fell, the floods came, and the winds blew and buffeted the house. But it did not collapse. It had been set solidly on rock. And everyone who listens to these words of mine but does not act on them will be like a fool who built his house on sand. The rain fell, the floods came, and the winds blew and buffeted the house, and it collapsed and was completely ruined." Jesus said to his disciples, "Not everyone who says to me, 'Lord, Lord,' will enter the kingdom of heaven, but only the one who does the will of my Father in heaven. Everyone who listens to these words of mine and acts on them will be like a wise man who built his house on rock. The rain fell, the floods came, and the winds blew and buffeted the house, but it did not collapse. It had been set solidly on rock. And everyone who listens to these words of mine but does not act on them will be like a fool who built his house on sand. The rain fell, the floods came, and the winds blew and buffeted the house, and it collapsed and was completely ruined." Jesus said to his disciples, "Not everyone who says to me, 'Lord, Lord,' will enter the kingdom of heaven, but only the one who does the will of my Father in heaven. Everyone who listens to these words of mine and acts on them will be like a wise man who built his house on rock. The rain fell, the floods came, and the winds blew and buffeted the house. But it did not collapse. It had been set solidly on rock. And everyone who listens to these words of mine but does not act on them will be like a fool who built his house on sand. The rain fell, the floods came, and the winds blew and buffeted the house. And it collapsed and was completely ruined. Checking to see if we're still feeling our bodies present. We bring our attention back to the room and open our eyes. Good evening. Thanks for coming out on this rainy day. There's lots of room up front here if anyone wants to come up. You guys in the back, you're so far away. Everybody's so far away tonight. Come on, come on. So were you able to hear with new ears? What did you hear? What spoke to you in that? Martin, and then Catherine.
I heard humility, grace, false personality. In that house that's destroyed, I've had many little houses destroyed. Some of them, if I get a good observation of it, it's a great, great humility and opportunity for self-observation, non-identification, self-remembering. And so the house gets wiped out. My personality has done something that has been very active and has manifested into something that I do not really want, like a washed-out house. But with self-observation and non-identification, I'm able to next time build that house on rock. To non-identify, self-remember.
Thank you. Up here, Catherine.
I heard listens to my words as our knowledge side of taking in the work, and acts on them would be applying it, the work, those work ideas to our being. And so understanding that results from that work exercise would be doing the will of God or being in the kingdom.
Thank you. Tamara, back again.
I heard build your house on rock, and the first thing that came to mind for me is the commentaries and how much joy I've gotten out of reading them. When I'm going through a difficult time, I just open up the commentaries and it helps me so much, and I feel like it's my rock because it helps remind me of the work. It gives me guidance, and you know, then I can externally consider, which has been a big thing in my life for the last few years, and self-remembering. But it's, I guess I'm one of those people that needs to keep reading it and keep reminding myself. And I just love reading the commentaries because even if I read the same commentary over and over again, it just keeps reminding me of, you know, how I can overcome negative thoughts, how I can become more Christ-like. Gives me strength. So I pray I can continue to work on myself.
Thank you. Yes, up here. Greta.
When I first heard it, it reminded me of the three little pigs. You know, the house of straw, the mm-hmm. house of wood, the house of brick, and huffing and puffing and blowing them down. And it reminded me of levels of being, different levels of being. When we're living at level 98, when we're in negativity, when we're in violence, then our houses, the coating of our being is also very fragile and easily torn apart by that self-same violence and negativity. Mm-hmm. When we're more stable, let's say we've become man number one, or we're in level man number four, we're in level 48, or something like that, we can be a good householder. And then when our houses are made of brick, when they're fortified, we have a united state of being. We can hold ourselves in a oneness of being. We are able to tune into higher levels of being. We're at level 24 or higher, and take in the understanding, the compassion, the joy, the love of God.
Thank you. Lewis, let's use this microphone.
Yeah. What came to me was the word act, also the word build. Reminded me of something that happened today, earlier. How immediately I got identified with something, and upon those actions, it was those actions that I can look back in retrospect and realize all my identifications were the weathering of that event for this one's personality. It wasn't quite a losing of being or anything, but it was just the recognition that I can come back, and with the application of that act and the understanding that I can rebuild upon that solid foundation. So to better the word I'm looking for. It's just there was something else I was going to say, but just so not to go further and understand that I can go back and reapply that and build on that foundation, even if I felt like it was on sandy structure in terms of where I was and where I am. And it did. It resolved itself later this evening. You know, it was like, this could happen in seconds. This could happen in a minute or an hour, or it can last that whole long day in terms of the scale of that. But I'll stop there.
Thank you. I heard act, but then as I was sitting and listening to you all, the hearing first, the listening comes first. So that does remind me of working on the side of knowledge first, so listening and taking things in and then acting on it, applying it to being, like you said, Greta. And if the work is there present for me, for incoming impressions, when the winds of identification are blowing and I'm being buffeted, then the house stands. I've got that solid center in me to withstand that. And then when I might hear, but there's no action on my part, then the house has the potential of being completely destroyed. That's kind of strong. In the past, it certainly has been the case. Go down the rabbit hole of total identification and, for me, self-criticism and that whole mess, house being destroyed. So, do you ever have that experience if you hear this little voice telling you to do something and you don't do it and then you really see that you should have done it, what it said? It's kind of that kind of thing. But, that rock of acting on the work of non-identifying and self-remember. Self-remembering is the rock. Yes, Lauren.
The words that got to me were set solidly. And I'm afraid I've been a little bit literal about many, many things in the scripture. And I think I thought about the little pig's brick house, and I can identify with all kinds of pigs being pig-headed and things like that. So that I was thinking about some of my set solid resolutions, my set solid things that I knew for sure. And many of them have been a little bit like the temple, whether it was destroyed by the Assyrians coming down like the wolf on the fold, or what many of my fondest rock solid actions, beliefs have been. Well, I don't know whether, well, not sure they were destroyed exactly, but they've turned out not to be set solidly. So I was wondering about that, and I was remembering one of the things that I learned, or maybe it was another rock solid ephemeral thing, but something changed in Judaism when the Ark of the Covenant was taken out of the tent on the move and parked in Jerusalem. So I learned that there was a kind of a something that had been solid became of the world and fragile. So anyway, this whole thing about set solidly on the rock is something that I want to ponder. I don't think I have struggled with it enough.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay, thank you. It's difficult to, for me anyway, to hear new things in very familiar passages. For me, I have to really sit with it a while to hear something new. All right, so the homework was to continue with this idea of the present moment being having the container of grace as the container of grace, the present moment, and to really be present with the people we're with, making eye contact, but really being present. How was your experience with that? I know for me, it showed up the times that I'm not present, almost more than when I am. But when I was, I noticed it the other day. It was easier, I observed, when I was relaxed. So if I wasn't rushing somewhere and trying to get something done. But I was at a store doing some Christmas shopping, and it came to me at when I was doing the checkout. And so there was this young man there, and he was acting a little goofy, but, you know, I just kind of let my, all those, that stuff that gets triggered by things, whatever, and it was just kind of present with him and looking in his eyes, and it was just kind of a delight, and I felt connection, whereas I probably wouldn't have, you know, otherwise. And I mean, that's what I'm learning about this, being present without all the associations with people. It's just a whole different experience. It really is grace. There's just, it's like a world of possibilities of seeing people differently opens up when I'm there in this present moment. So just a glimpse, a few glimpses. I'd be sitting with my husband, and it's like, oh, I'm not making eye contact. I'm not, make eye contact. It's like, oh, yeah. I see the habit we've gotten into of not making eye contact. Tumbling. And you want it so much, and it's just like, oh my gosh, it's so mechanical not to. So it's good work. It's good work. Tamara, did you want to? Getting a lot of exercise there. Sharon, thank you.
So I found this exercise really exciting and life-changing for me, because I am a seven, and so I'm constantly thinking about the next thing and thinking about what I should do next. And this has been such a great experience. Mark and I went out to the Guadalupe State Park last weekend, and I was practicing it. And it's such a big change for me, a big change, because I'm always thinking about, oh, I should be doing this, or what am I going to do next? But just saying, because sometimes I would go out to a park and I actually didn't even enjoy it, because half the time I'm racing around from one thing into the other saying, oh, we have to go do this, we have to go do that, and, you know, I don't have time to do this, you know. But it was so nice, because I just sat there and looked at the surroundings, and I know you talked about looking at people in the eyes, and I guess I didn't do that too much yet. Mm-hmm. But just being in the moment for me, and I found myself a lot lighter, and I walked up to other people, talked to them, and didn't have all these other things weighing on me. And just came home with the most beautiful experience. So I'm going to try to continue to do that, because it's really beautiful. Just to say, okay, I'm here in this moment, and I'm going to enjoy every minute of it. Yeah. So thank you. It was a great exercise.
You're welcome. Thank you. Tracy.
So like you, it was more noticing, not doing it. I have a chief feature. It's that vanity and pride thing. And my work partner this morning, she asked me while I was sharing about this, and she said, what's the feeling right before? Because I insert myself very chronically, like regularly, like, you know how Pamela always talks about, what's that thing that needs to insert itself? Mm-hmm. And I said, it feels like those racehorses that just can't wait to get out the gate and say what they want to say. Mm-hmm. And it's like I cannot not insert myself. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if the chief feature, I think I'm an eight, and I'm a three, sorry. And I think one of the chief features of that is vanity. It wants, it loves saying something, getting attention for saying something. Something about being a know-it-all, let me tell you how it is. So it was just an ongoing observation, as much as I've had the wish to be a listener for over a year. And it's just feels like I'm just seeing the opposite more and more and more. Mm-hmm. So I just feel at the mercy of it, truly. I really do. And the only thing I've come up with is, you know, hang on to a work partner. You talk about one of our foundations, like that gospel thing of, you know, my work partner's a foundation. The first semester or two of movements, you know, I leaked all over the place. I couldn't keep my mouth shut. And I think I've made a little progress in movements of keeping my mouth shut. But, you know, not in movements, there's very little will that, you know, wants to not leak. It just wants to leak all over the place. So, besides what I've already do, which is all the practices this church encourages, the only thing I came up with is to go from full strength coffee to half decaf, half regular and half decaf. Maybe that will, downshift this personality a little bit. Because I've wished and wished and wished. You can talk to probably the last two or three work partners to be more of a listener. And it just, it's like the Holy Grail for me. So I'll just keep wishing. Drink a little less caffeine.
Thank you. Yeah, it's the pattern, the habituated patterns are tricky. And we have to, and I'm not hearing a lot of self-criticism from you. I'm hearing just a wish for, what I'm hearing is like a wish for intimacy with people and being able to listen at a deeper level. It's just, it's seeing it and maybe finding right before it speaks, really sitting with that moment at a different time and just, what is it? You know, why do I need to do that? Just for information. Thank you. Thank you. Frank.
This one heard the homework is to try to be present in the moment by looking others in the eye and keeping quiet. And what constantly haunted Frank was impatience. It was, come on, what do you got to say? And it makes it very difficult to remain in the moment when you're thinking about what someone's got to say
yeah.
and why they don't say it. And what's wrong with them? And what am I missing? All of that monkey mind stuff just jumps out as soon as this one tries to consciously slow it down and just look someone in the eye and just make a connection without more and be there. Very hard for this one, but a good exercise.
Yeah, it is. Thank you. And remember, it's not about being successful, right? It's about observing and knowing that it's not you. It's a personality. Seeing if we're resisting what's manifesting because that will keep it manifesting. Yes, Jenna.
It's on a much lighter note, but when I go to exercise class, you know, there's that resistance. Oh, I don't want to do this or whatever. And in terms of being present, I've discovered that when I'm doing the exercise, if I pay attention to the instructor while I'm doing it, so I've got my movement going, if I engage my intellectual and concentrate on how I'm doing it, then that I don't want to do this piece goes away, the emotional piece goes away. But at the same time, I found that, so that's using the two centers to override the one. But at the same time, I've discovered that the two centers will try to override. The two negative centers can try to override the third. So if I'm doing the movement and it's my emotional center that wants to win out over my intellectual center, it's like, oh, this is too hard for you, or this song is too fast, it's too hard to keep up. And it will, that center will try to band up with my movement center to make me miserable and negative. So I've just found it interesting that that when I catch it going on, that I can notice which centers, and then very quickly get out of that negativity and keep up better with class as well.
Yeah.
So it helps.
Yeah, thank you. That's good work. Greta, let's use this microphone here. Greta, let's use the other one. Thanks.
I went to San Antonio to visit a friend of mine who is basically an invalid. And we had about 5 hours together. The first 2 hours, she was sitting up in her neck brace and her special chair and whatever, and we had lunch with her beloved. And then she had to lie down and take medicine. And I went into her room and sat with her, but she wasn't able to communicate for the first hour. And the second hour, we were holding hands, and she had a lot of projections and fears, and I told her a story. It's very, very short. The Buddha goes to the first monk and says, "What is the human lifespan?" And the monk says, "From birth to death." And the Buddha says, "Ah." And he goes to the second monk, and he says, "What is the human lifespan?" And the second monk says, "The time it takes to eat a meal." And the Buddha goes, "Ah." He goes to the third monk, "How long is the human lifespan?" "The time it takes to breathe in and out." And the Buddha goes, "Ah." Fourth monk, "How long is the human lifespan?" And the monk looks at him and he says, "This moment." And I told her that story. And then our eyes locked. And then I said again, "This moment." And then we had a conversation that was so present, so little having to do with the past or the present, and so much to do with the point of love, the point of inclusiveness of everything, the point where things like pain and fear and things like that just slip away. And that went on for 2 hours. And then I went, and it was a beautiful time for both of us, and we both were so fed by that. It was quite a miracle.
Yeah, sounds like it. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. There's no time in that, is there? It was probably went quickly. Thank you. Yes, Lee.
Well, through this church, I have the blessing of having the toddlers once a month, and had them last weekend, and you talk about being in the moment, locking eyes with just pure essence. And you have no choice but to be there right then and there with them. And it reminds me of what I came from. And it's just beyond words how beautiful it is, but it's these little beings that just beam essence, and they look you square in the eye, and it's just, it's beautiful. But I just realized what that was part of my exercise, and I wasn't realizing when I was doing it because it came so naturally being with them. But what a gift that is.
Yes, thank you. It just reminded me, when I was with my granddaughter this week, same. It's like, oh, it's so easy to be in the present moment. And just being there, I was watching her look at this moss in between some rocks and just being fascinated by that. And I was fascinated by it. And just, yeah, there's nothing else. I mean, they are just so right there. Yeah, I felt just this joy, this warmth, this love, just being. It does stay with you, yes. Yeah. Until she puts up resistance, then it's not so. Anyone else? So, one of the other classes I did a while back, we talked about inquiry, working with inquiry. So, I really see as doing that as being in the present moment of grace. What I've come to see through making that a regular practice is that it is truly a lectio experience for me. It's meditation. It's not just asking yourself a question and the answer coming out. It's really sitting with it like we do with scripture and just allowing the truth to arise. So I thought we could do a little bit of work in the moment here. If someone has someone would like to do some inquiry over with maybe a place you feel stuck, a thought, a belief that you know that you've been stuck at, and it this week. I mean, you can make it this week. It doesn't have to be a big thing. It can be a little thing. On the way to church tonight, was coming was people should drive the speed limit. They shouldn't drive under the speed limit. You shouldn't go too slow. Well, that's kind of hopeless, you know. But it's those little things. If you do inquiry with, it's quite interesting to see what you come to. So, would anybody like to be brave and just have fun to play? Jody, okay.
I actually had this happen, well, tonight, and it happened last night, and it's been happening for several years, but I've been working on it, trying to work on it. My brother, who I love dearly, and I talk to almost every day or two, has a very dysfunctional family. And he tells me things, and he doesn't want any advice. And I know it's not my place to give him advice, but it just comes out. I don't even have, you know, that moment to gauge. It just comes out. And I'm just not, and after it's over, I'll send him a text and apologize. And he doesn't think anything about it. I mean, he just goes right over his head. But I don't feel good about it because I know that I don't know. You know, I don't know what's best for him.
Right.
But sometimes I think I do.
So let's find It's really good with inquiry to focus outward before you do it on yourself. Okay, it's just you get to yourself because it's, as we know, it's all about ourselves. But so find a situation where you're judging your brother. Okay, can you pinpoint what it was that you think he should or shouldn't do? Like, I'm angry with my brother because what? Very short, simple.
It's not anger.
Or
at all.
Frustrated.
It's frustration.
Okay, so I'm frustrated.
I'm frustrated with my brother because he's going to send his granddaughter, who he's raising, to a private school.
Okay, so would you say he shouldn't send his granddaughter?
Mm-hmm. Who he's raising.
He shouldn't send his, and we can keep, we know that it's who he's raising. He shouldn't send his granddaughter to a private school. Is that your kind of belief around it? Is that correct?
Well, it's the reason he's sending her to a private school.
Right. So you don't like that?
Right.
Yeah. So really you're saying he shouldn't send her to a private school. He shouldn't send his grand. Okay. So, all right. So we're going to use the sentence, my brother shouldn't send his granddaughter to a private school. Okay. So, Jody, your brother shouldn't send his granddaughter to a private school. Is that true? And just sit with that. It's one syllable, yes or no, and either one is fine.
No.
Okay. So now we have no. The second question would be, can you absolutely know it's true? But since you got to know, if the first question is yes, you would go to the second one. Can we absolutely know that it's true? But you came to a no already. So three is, so how do you react? What happens when you believe the thought your brother shouldn't send his granddaughter to a private school?
How do I react?
Right. What this is, now you're sitting in that moment. What happens, you're basically doing a three-centered observation. And everybody else, you're not just listening to this. Everyone has a situation that's similar that you can find. Okay, so you're doing the work of this inquiry at the same time that Jody is. Okay, so just see if you can find a situation any time in your life where there was, it's not going to be your granddaughter is going to a private school, it's not that, or your brother's granddaughter, but something that you disagreed with, you could pick something. Find a situation for yourself and do this work at the same time, okay? All right, so, yeah, so do just kind of sit in it, close your eyes, be there in that moment when he's telling you, or whatever the situation is, really be there. So what happens in you?
Physically, just my heart starts to race a little bit.
Good.
And my breathing increases and I feel just a tightness in my head.
Okay, that's physically. How about emotionally?
I immediately feel regret, you know, for saying something. I mean, because I say it as soon as, before I even, I feel regret, you know, I just feel regret.
Well,
for
let's
judging.
Let's just keep it to the initial judgment here.
Okay.
So everything gets tight, but so what is it that you're feeling?
Helplessness.
Mm-hmm. Before you say anything, what is it? What is the feeling of the judgment? Well, you said frustration.
Frustration.
Right?
That's frustration. It's frustration.
Right. Okay.
Because I saw him do this with his sons. He doesn't discipline. He just can't or doesn't discipline. So he moves them from school to school because they can't mind. They can't do what they're supposed to do, so he blames it on the schools and he moves them.
Okay,
and so I just see the same pattern beginning.
So, right. So this is where we get into past thinking. So these images of the past come up, right?
Exactly.
Okay, so they're past images. And then there's the future image, right? This mm-hmm. It's going to happen again, correct? Yeah.
She's going to become a teenager that he can't control, just like the two sons.
Right. Okay. Right. Yeah. So, okay. So there's judgment. There's the sensations, there's a feeling, there's the frustration, there's the past images, the future images. And so, who would you be? How would you, well, okay, before we get there, how do you treat him when you believe the thought? Now you can bring in what happened. When you believe the thought that your brother shouldn't send his grandchild to a private school, what happens? How do you treat him?
I try to be loving, but I'm controlling.
Mm-hmm. How does that manifest?
Just in me, just saying things that are unfiltered, not thinking mm-hmm. before I speak.
Okay.
And then immediately regretting it and just not understanding why I can't take a breath and stop and externally consider.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So that feeling of feeling bad. So this would another part of the question is, so how do you treat yourself in that situation when you believe the thought that your brother shouldn't send his grandson to a private school?
I feel really bad about myself. I judge myself and, you know, feel real regretful and just bad. I think I feel bad. I feel worse about it than he does because I immediately apologize and he can tell I'm so sorry. And he immediately says, worry about it. You're probably right. But I know it's not my place and it doesn't help him because he's, everything I've said 100 times. It's not like I'm saying anything new.
Okay. All right. So, in that situation, how would it be different if you couldn't even think the thought, my brother shouldn't send his grandson to a private school?
It would just be a conversation, you know? It would be okay. Mm-hmm. It would just be a conversation, and he's given me some information, and I'm not judging it or making any decisions about it. I'm just hearing it, which is all he wants, is just for me to listen. And that's what I want to do for him, but I'm not quite there yet.
Well, but just that what you want to do is really sit in that place of not even being able to think of those thoughts, because you talked about self-judgment, you talked about judgment of him, so that all goes away. So what is that like?
Love. When I take all that away, it just feels like love.
For him and yourself. Right.
I'll see if I can do that.
So one thing we didn't do the last time we worked with inquiry is working with the turnarounds. So another part of this is you take a statement, my brother shouldn't send his grandson to a private school, and you find an opposite. You find opposites. So what would an opposite be? My brother shouldn't send his grandson to a private school.
My brother should send his granddaughter to whatever school he wants to.
Well, to you keep the same languaging, to a private
school.
Okay,
my brother... Yeah. Mm.
My brother should send...
Now, why am I saying that?
Well, because you're trying to see other... You're trying to open your mind to other possibilities.
Okay.
So,
okay.
we're just exploring here. Okay. It's just inquiring, okay? It's just so... Now, in that situation, how could, three ways that could be true, that he should send her
My
to...
My brother should send his granddaughter to a private school.
Right. I mean, they might not. It might not work, but it's just kind of just seeing, how could it be true?
Because... It's a smaller school, and she may be happier there.
Good, that's one.
Because it will give my brother some comfort to think that she's in a better environment.
Good.
And it will please his wife.
Okay. Good. All right, can you find another turnaround? And you can turn it around, instead of your brother should send his granddaughter to a private school, you can turn it around to, or shouldn't, to I. Make everything I in there. So this is going to be kind of funky. I should send myself to a private school. Play with that one.
I should send myself to a private school like CCH.
Good. Yeah. Yeah.
Supposed to say another one?
You can find, well, I mean, if there's more with that, but
that's it.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see if we can find, anyone else see another turnaround? My brother shouldn't send. We did, my brother should send. Yeah, I don't see any more.
Good. That helps. Thank you.
Yeah. It just expands the mind a little bit. Thank you. Thank you. Anyone else want to try one? No? Oh, Tracy? Okay.
Last time you had this exercise, I did this one on paper,
mm-hmm.
and it was really fun. Because the thought, the turnaround thought, had never, ever occurred to me, ever.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a chronic thought that I should be losing weight.
Mm-hmm.
I always think that.
Uh-huh.
I should be losing weight. And so then, you know, I did the, is it true? And like, yes. But then, is it absolutely true? No. How do you feel when you think that thought? Mad. Hurt, afraid, mad and afraid. Who would you be without that thought? I'd be happy. Okay, so get to the turnaround, though. And I should be losing weight. And then there was, I shouldn't be losing weight. And then there was, I should be gaining weight.
Yes.
I have never thought that. I have never, ever had that thought.
So
until
how is that true? for you?
I should be gaining weight?
Mm-hmm.
Well, tonight is the fresh... I'd forgotten that part about the three ways. I'd forgotten that, mm-hmm. So I appreciate you bringing that up tonight. Because I love food. Mm-hmm. because... I'm getting older. And because it's good for keeping me humble. How's that?
Good. I have another. Do you want to hear it?
Sure.
Because that's reality?
Well, it's actually not.
Oh, well. Okay. Well, it could be. It could be in the future.
Nope. Despite the reality, this one chronically thinks it should be losing weight.
Okay.
Despite the reality.
The other way that when you work with this with yourself, so instead of I, you can substitute my thinking.
My thinking?
My thinking should lose weight. How's that one?
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting?
It's got way too much going on in there.
I think you should lose weight. Yeah.
But anyway, I can't tell you how freeing it was. It was like page 10 on steroids, that the thought, I should be gaining weight. That was like, oh my God. How incredible.
Thank you. Yeah. Catherine.
So I've been struggling with this issue. My sister's fiance, I really don't like. Mm-hmm. And I have this continual story, and I want to say it's factual. He's a drunk. Mm-hmm. And I've noticed this for a while. My whole body goes uber tight. I can't look him in the eyes. I don't want to engage him. And then it's making me not want to hang out with her because they're always together. Mm-hmm. And it's almost hard for her to hang just us two. Mm-hmm. And I know it's hard on my body. It's hard on my brain, my heart. I can feel it close up. So I know it's not healthy for me. It's sure as heck not healthy for him. And so it's interesting walking through this. So I would love to shed light on this and please work on it. So
yeah,
something happens.
So would it be accurate to say what's his name?
Or Justin.
Okay. Justin shouldn't drink or shouldn't be a drunk?
Yeah, shouldn't be a drunk, because I could care less if, he had a glass of wine.
Right,
yeah, okay. He shouldn't be a drunk.
Okay. Justin shouldn't be a drunk. So, Catherine, Justin shouldn't be a drunk, is it true? So anchor yourself in that situation that you're with them and he's drunk. Okay. Mm-hmm. So he shouldn't be drunk, is it true? Yes is fine, no is fine.
I want to say yes.
Okay. Okay. So Justin shouldn't be a drunk. Can you absolutely know that's true?
No.
No. So how do you react? What happens when you believe the thought that Justin shouldn't be drunk? Or a drunk?
My heart closes. My whole body tenses. I can feel it in the upper shoulders, the neck. And I kind of zone out. I'll just stare into space because it's just like, it is like borderline numb out, but also feel the tension at the same time. And then I don't want to talk. I don't want to talk to anybody around because it's just, I'm so upset. Like there's definitely a degree of hurt to it too.
How do you treat him?
I pretty much don't acknowledge him. I don't really engage him in conversation unless I have to. Of course, if he asks me, he doesn't talk a whole lot, but if he does come out of his shell and talk, then of course I'll talk back to him. But I kind of just ignore him. And then when it's time to, I'll say hi, not talk. And then when it's time to say bye, do a fake hug and say bye and then leave.
Mm-hmm. How do you treat yourself when you believe the thought that Justin shouldn't be a drunk?
Negative. I've never thought of that. I just know that I'm in a negative state. And then when I let the negative sit for a certain amount of time, I typically break down into tears. Over Thanksgiving, I watched him 3 days in a row get obliterated. And then I held that in for 3 days. And then I sit on a couch with my boyfriend and realize I've been just sitting with this. And then I just totally lost it. And then I felt better because I actually allowed myself to feel and not numb out. Mm-hmm. So I'm not good to myself at all. I kind of just cut myself off.
Yeah. Anything else? Question three?
Nope, that's it.
Again, when you do this by yourself, you can sit with these questions a long time. And it's amazing what comes up the longer you sit with it, too. That was a lot right there. So who would you be? How would you be different? How would it feel different if you couldn't even think the thought that Justin shouldn't be a drunk?
That would be so nice. So nice. It would feel lighter in the body. My heart would be open. It would be nice to have connection with him, knowing he's about to marry my sister, who I love to death. I'd be more present there for my sister. And I would be able to look him in the eyes and be present as we were working on. It would be so much nicer for everybody.
How would your body feel differently, too? A little bit more about that.
It would be open, and I always just think of light. Because I can feel the weight when I'm around him. I feel like if I were to step on a scale, it would break. Like, it feels that heavy. Mm-hmm. And then if I didn't think that thought, I know I would feel light. I was like, oh, I'm just kind of gliding on water here. Mm-hmm.
I wonder too, I know in my experience that then when I'm not believing a thought like that, I can easily, much more easily get to a place of external considering. Mm-hmm. Or understanding. Mm-hmm. Of putting myself in the other person's shoes, or knowing that I don't know why this is happening, you know.
Mm-hmm, thank you. That's helpful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, I turn around. Justin shouldn't be a drunk.
When I was doing the exercise in my head when Jody was going, I thought, I was using the phrase as I worked on it by myself, Justin is a drunk. So a little different.
A drunk.
And
okay.
Then I reversed it and was like, I am a drunk.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh my gosh.
You can use that. How is that true?
I'm not a huge drinker, so it's hard for me to get there, but I know there's other ways where I'm drunk. I just know that I'm human and I go to sleep.
I have one. You want to hear it?
Yes, please.
You're drunk with your thinking about him being drunk.
Oh, it's true. Oh, yes. Yeah, I'm just drunk in thought and negativity towards why this is not okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's a good one. In the other reversal, Justin should be a drunk, is hard for me to say. It's almost like, yeah, that's a joke.
Mm-hmm. Well, it could be he should be a drunk because he is. That's a reality. So otherwise, when you think that he shouldn't be a drunk, you're arguing with reality, which causes you suffering.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Can you see how that works?
Mm-hmm.
It shouldn't be that way. It shouldn't be that way. Who's suffering here? He's happy and drunk, you know, maybe.
Right. Yeah.
But who's suffering?
You know? Right. Thank you.
Yeah. He should be because he is right now. It's just a stage. Maybe Byron Katie used to say, you know, you never know what the best thing is for somebody's spiritual path. You know, look at where we've been.
Right.
No. We just don't know. Yeah. Is there any other turnaround that you see?
What's coming to my mind is I should be a drunk, but that doesn't sound right to me.
Yeah. Oh, that's okay. It's just one of those things you kind of sit with. Oh, hmm. Sometimes they don't, you know. So what's the opposite of drunk? Sober? Mm-hmm. Justin should be sober. Mm-hmm. You can look at it that way. Certainly you were thinking that in the moment, right? Mm-hmm. You're looking right at that moment too. You know, seeing what's true in that moment. You can see that. Or my thinking should be sober. That's another good one.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Good sober means soulful.
Means what?
Soulful.
Soulful? Sober means soulful. Yeah. You want to say more about that? Microphone? Say more.
In my work with people, that's one of the etymological discoveries I made that was helpful. I guess just thinking about it in this way, it certainly makes me want to be way sober. Mm-hmm. So, as a matter of fact, drunk with soberness, drunk with soulfulness, exuberantly soulful.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you could play with that, I think.
Yes. Yeah, recontextualizing the whole idea of being drunk. Yeah, interesting. That sounds like a Rumi thing, too. Drunk on reality, yeah. Yeah. Anything else with that, Catherine? Is that you feel complete with it?
I do, thank you. I'm going to sit with it.
Because
I'm sure all sorts of stuff will spring up if I give it the space and the time.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And you can always go to thework.com, and they have the, she has all her resources are free. You can get the Judge Your Neighbor worksheet on there. And so you take that sentence, and then you, there are six questions you actually write about. So you're really getting into that belief. And then you apply the four questions and the turnarounds. And you can go through each of the statements, because it's, you're saying, I want this person to do this, I need them to, they should, and I think this of them. And I mean, you're just really letting it rip. I mean, they rip, these eyes, you know, they really do. We try to say, oh, I've worked, I'm a work student, I don't, you know. Well, yes, and these things still can still live in us for those things that really catch us. And there's nothing wrong with putting it down on paper. That's where it should be. Byron Katie's All War Belongs on Paper. And that's that internal war, that stuff that we believe. It all belongs on paper. We could see it. We accept it. Say, okay, wow, let's look at this. Question it. Bring the mind to inquiry. It's a way, it's not the only way, I'm just saying this is a way to really go deep with some of these thoughts. Because, I mean, she talks about how she worked on her mother for a whole year, worksheet after worksheet after worksheet, and it applied to everyone. Everyone and every thought she ever had. You can get everything out of one situation. You really can. So, you can go to thework.com. She has those worksheets there if you want to do that, delve more deeply into it. So thank you for sitting through that. I hope it's useful for you. If anyone's interested in more information or doing some more work with inquiry, I'd be happy to do facilitation with anyone. Just I want to practice more, so if you're interested, let me know. Before I forget, back on the table back there with the basket, there's a sign-up sheet if anyone is interested. We're inviting anyone from this class who would like to come to the movements demonstration on Saturday. You'd be coming at 11 o'clock. You'll be in the fellowship hall. We have some, I had forgotten to, it's so funny, a movements leader, and I forgot to announce it last week. Anyway, there's a sheet there if you'd like to. It won't be very long, but you're welcome to come and observe. We'd love to have you there. All right, so, oh, homework, right. Thank you. let's stay with this practice of presence. So we're practicing presence, the present moment. And this, you know, this is in addition to your own, whatever else you're working on, when it comes, this container of grace of the present moment. And you can approach that in different ways, like connecting eye contact with people, being present in, like Tamara, with nature, seeing things, working with to see things without associations. There are different ways to work with the present moment. Just play with it. Find the delight in it. Find a two-year-old. Sharon left, but I believe the Glorious Impossible is next week. So we will not have class next week. Next week? In 2 weeks. Sorry. Okay, never mind. We will have... But I'm announcing the Glorious Impossibles in 2 weeks. You won't want to miss that, probably. Thank you. Oh, it would have been previous years. It was that previous week, that week. All right, thank you. So coming back to our bodies, present in this moment, finding gratitude for what we've been given. And we affirm and remember together that God's love has always met and will always meet all my needs. I give freely and receive joyfully. And how blessed we are to simply remember God. We dedicate and consecrate these tithes and offerings to the victory of consciously chosen love in each of our lives and on our planet, over the lie of separation and our useless acting out from fear. In Christ we pray. Amen. Have a good week in the present moment.